Hello and welcome to a cornucopia of Tales and Tellers. I'm Simona, and today I've got a little bit of a cold and a sore throat, but we are here and it's going to be a fantastic episode. And today helping me is the fantastic David Heathfield. Hello, David, and thank you for coming.
Hi Simona, it's great to be here. When I say here, it's in Zoom world, but physically I'm storytelling in Germany in a city, a small town called Wolfensbüttel, and telling stories with children here. So, but it's wonderful to be here because of the guest that we're going to be interviewing.
Yes, absolutely. So when I told David the other day, well, I'm going to interview this person. Would you like to come along? He was like, "Yes, I'm in Germany, but I'll do my best to be there." So without further ado, here is our guest for tonight, the wonderful Jakey Ross. Hello, Jakey, and welcome.
Hello, Simona. Hello, David. It's wonderful to be here. And I'm going to be off a big Z by the end of this program if you keep saying all these nice things about me. But
Well, you
I'm not sure
deserve
if big Z
them.
is big Z an English word or a Scottish word? I'm not sure. Is it a Scottish word? Is it
Yes.
definitely
big headed? Big headed.
Oh, big-headed. Well, now it makes sense. Yeah. Well, you deserve everything we're saying, so that's fine. And so, Jackie, can you tell us something about yourself? Well, David and I know you as a storyteller from Scotland, and we know that you like telling stories from Scotland and also from all over the world. But can you introduce yourself in your own words?
Oh, Mehdi. Well, I am a Scottish quine, a lady from Scotland. And I bide up in the northeast near Aberdeen, on Royal Dee side, no less. I've been telling stories probably since I was a bairn, a little girl. I've always loved stories, and I think I used to make up stories. I lived on a farm. And I would help with the chores around the farm, feeding the cattle or the hens or bedding the cows. And in order to make this work more interesting, I would make up stories. I would be the princess trapped in the tower or some slave to this overlord who was treating me badly. So I think storytelling has been a part of my life always. And it's just joyous, isn't it?
Yes. And hearing you speak is joyous. And I'm really sad that this is a podcast, so people can't see because I was looking at Zoom and David and I were like smiling at you when you were speaking because it made us really, really, really happy to hear what you were saying. So thank you. And so Jackie, you said that you live in Scotland. And what about the context of storytelling in Scotland? So, do you tell Scottish tales? So, how did you start? Like, you started by making up stories, or did you start by listening to stories as well?
Well, I think although I don't actually remember sitting on my mum's knee or my granny's knee, but I know they told me stories, and I remember little fragments like my granny. I had this teddy bear. In fact, I've still got him. And if we were doing a Zoom, I would get him so to show everybody. But just imagine this old threadbare teddy with only one eye and patches all over him. And this was my granny told me that Jack Frost had stolen my teddy's eye. And this just captivated me, this kind of thing. And my mum would tell me stories about some of the local hills. There's this hill with a great stone, a pile of stones, really, at the top of it. And down at the bottom, there's a gully that is in the exact shape of that pile of stones. So she said the devil bit the stones out of the bottom of the hill and spat it up to the top and buried his wife. So these kind of tales, I think, just fired my imagination. And of course, I bid at the foot of the hill where the witches used to gather. Some of the, unfortunately, we had lots of witches in this area, and a lot of them came from just right near where I grew up. So you can imagine, as a youngster, it's fertile ground for story and imagination.
I've heard you tell a few stories in Dorrick, Jackie, and several of those stories are about landscape, are about how this rock, like you just said, with the, I love the spitting of the rocks, how that came to be there. And there's a, I mean, all over the world, there's a close connection between story and landscape. Is that particularly the case in the northeast of Scotland?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's all over. But it's, for me, it is a particular interest. And I love that connection with the land. And I guess, you know, I come from a rural area where people were very close to the land. And so it's no surprise that we have lots of stories about the wee folk that would, you know, certain fields that would not have been ploughed because there was a fairy hill or a fairy hummock there. Or the, you know, you had to be careful by the river because the kelpie would come and drown you. And I think these things are, they're integral to the landscape. And I love that. A lot of the tales, I think, are kind of lost in their fullness, but you get little snippets, and so you can sort of, using the whole structure of old tales, you can sort of rebuild them a little bit. You know, one of my favorite books is called The Primitive Beliefs of the Northeast of Scotland, and it's a great book, and you get little snippets in there like the devil came to live at Durris one winter, and he spent his time heckling the minister from the rafters of the kirk. I mean, that's just wonderful, isn't it? I mean, so I think we
from
do
that little nub of an idea, you can develop a whole world of stories.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I love is then, you know, I instantly think of that wee tale that my mother told me, because Durris and Craig, the Clachnaben, they're not that far apart. And just looking across the valley, you can see Benahee, which is an iconic hill in this area, an extinct volcano. And there is a giant who lives on Benahee. And he had a bit of a penchant for throwing stones. So, you know, you've got these three tales kind of that all you can intertwine them and create fabulous stories. So, yeah, you just step out the door and you're into the world of tales and legends, and it's wonderful.
So can you tell us a bit more about what Dorrick is and what being, I mean, I think, am I right to say you often call yourself a Dorrick storyteller?
I do indeed, David. Yeah. Well, Dorrick is the dialect of Scots, which is spoken in the northeast of Scotland. Many people don't realise that the Scottish language is different from English. They're very closely related languages, but they are different. And within Scotland, as within England, I mean, there are lots of dialects of English. So within Scotland, there are lots of dialects of the Scottish language, or Scots language. And so where I come from, Dorrick is what we call it. And even within Dorrick, there are lots of different dialects. You know, there's Fishin Dorrick, there's Farmin Dorrick, there's Toon Dorrick. And I'm a country quine, so I speak the country Dorrick. And I do tell, interestingly enough, when I first started telling stories, it was mostly in English. But I would occasionally tell in Dorrick, depending on my audience. You know, if I was in an audience that were very much Dorrick speakers, then I would tell. But during lockdown, I got approached by a local community trust who wanted me to do a weekly story in Doric for their Facebook, because they wanted to have some connection with their community, and they wanted it in Doric. And from that time, most of my storytelling has been in Doric, because I suddenly thought, oh, you know, this is my mother tongue, this is my language, I'm passionate about my language. And so that's how I want to tell stories. And increasingly, schools are looking for that, because there's a big push on to do Scots language in schools. So that's exciting.
Oh, that's really amazing news to me. I imagined you'd always been a Doric storyteller, but it's something that you've really developed just recently in the last couple of years.
In terms of, I would say before, I probably told in English 75% of the time, whereas now it would have flipped, it would be Doric maybe 80% of the time. Most, if you... Mm-hmm.
So what's the role of a storyteller who's telling a story in Doric?
Doric.
I mean, let's talk about Doric specifically, yes. But also maybe we could look across the world at people who are speaking languages which are, how would we term them? Languages which are...
Minority language.
Minority languages?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we certainly come under the EU sort of designation of minority language. As I say, Doric is my mother tongue. It's what I spoke all the time when I was a bairn. I was lucky, because I went to a school for the Domnie, the headmaster, didn't stop us speaking our mother tongue. Many of my peers in other schools would have actually got belted for speaking Doric. Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not political about the language. I'm just passionate about speaking it, because it's me, it's my identity, it's how I think. But for some folk, it's all about colonialization, David. and you know, certainly there's been a huge push to change it. Some folks say we're a bit late in getting the schools doing Doric and things, because a lot of the younger generation are not speaking it regularly. But I think that depends what part of the country you come from. There are still very strong pockets where Doric is the main language that is spoken by folk. So for me, why do I tell in Doric? Lots of reasons. One, there are still lots of folk for this is their first language, and it's important that they hear stories in their first language. And that's young folk and old folk as well. When it comes to older folk, I think it's vitally important that they get to hear stories in their mother tongue, because I was in a care home just the other week, and some of these folk don't get to hear a lot of Doric, because God bless them, many of our care workers are not from this country, and they're definitely not Doric speakers, and we are ever so grateful to have them, but it can be an issue in terms of communication sometimes for older people, particularly if they've got dementia, when, you know, people often revert to their mother tongue. So I think it's really important that folk get the chance to hear somebody speaking in their own language. And stories are such a great way to communicate with folk, because everybody can enjoy a good story. And, you know, you can laugh together, you can spark memory, and, you know, depending on what kind of story you do. And then for the young folk, I think story, and you guys know this well, story is a great way to teach a language and to pass a language on, because folk will be able to pick up words set in a story in a way that is fun, and it's not so hard work. as having to learn it, like grammar, etc.
Yeah. And Jackie, I really loved listening to you speak about your language and the difference between Doric and English. And it really reminded me of my own situation. I'm of a different generation, but my grandparents, they don't speak Italian. Both my grandparents just speak Milanese dialect. My grandpa, he went to elementary school only. My grandma did middle school as well. But both of them always tell me, when I went to school, Italian was difficult for me because I didn't speak Italian. And only with television then this changed. And now we came to a point where my generation, the younger generation, we don't speak dialects. And when the older generation will disappear eventually, dialects will disappear as well. I can speak some Milanese dialect, but not as well as I should, because I've never learned Milanese. I've never spoken Milanese except with my grandparents, and even with them I spoke Italian, and because they understand Italian, but they don't really, they struggle to speak correctly. So it reminded me of this situation, and I was just enjoying you speak about that, and the fact that they're trying to introduce these in schools again, because I think it's really important, and it's something that will die out eventually if we don't do something about it. So I think you're doing a wonderful job with that. And
just to add to that, I'm teaching a course at the moment for teachers, school teachers in Malaysia, and there's one man on the course, Binsos Omisang, who lives in a very remote part of Sabah in the north of the island of Borneo. And one of his reasons for doing the course is he wants to pass on the local traditional language, because it's not written down and it's under threat. And he wants to write it down and illustrate books for children. So I think storytelling has an incredible function in maintaining minority languages. Doric is written, yes, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's interesting that, because for most people, it's an oral language. You know, and if I go back historically, King James I and the 6th and 1st actually wrote in Scots. But when he went to England, he gave that up. But we'll move on. So Scots was a written language, but then when English got pushed, the writing of Scots became much less common. And the language was continued as an oral language amongst the country people and the fisher folk, you know, the less well educated. So you're right, it wasn't so much a written language for them. But we do, you know, we can write it. And that kind of links into my other passion, which is the production of books written in Doric for children. And that's something I've been involved in in the last couple of years, because we want people to be able to read and write as well as speak the language. And so we need to build people's confidence up in terms of reading and writing it. It's important. And I applaud your gentleman in Sabah and wish him every best wish. Yeah. Diversity of language is just as important as any kind of diversity in this world. And, you know, we just don't want monoculture in any form, do we really? Just let's have that difference.
Viva difference. You said you weren't political, but I think being a Doric storyteller, that is a political act. And actually, I see you, Jackie, not, you know, tough political, but that soft activism of sharing culture. And, you know, not only with Doric, but there's even in other areas where you're trying to make a difference to the world through storytelling. Simona and I have both had the joy of coming to an annual event. I don't even know if I can say the name of it. It just makes me blush.
Oh, David, really? Well, my toilet tales are definitely my favourite annual event.
Tell us about toilet tales, Jackie, although we know tales. Already. Yeah.
You do. You two know, and you are wonderful supporters of toilet tales. Thank you so much. Well, each 19th of November, I try to celebrate World Toilet Day. And this is a day, I think it's a United Nations Day, but it's set up to try and promote awareness of the fact that many, many people across the world do not have proper sanitation. And there's a world toilet, I think it's just called the toilet twinning organization that I've supported for many years, where you can twin your toilet with a toilet in another country and thereby support the development of sanitation in these different places. I thought, well, everybody likes a good tale, and a toilet tale goes down. Although I have to say, David, and I hope you would agree, you and Simona, that these are not smutty tales. They are in great and wonderful taste and just very amusing.
Almost wholesome.
Absolutely. But, you know, everybody has got a tale associated with the toilet. And we don't allow smut on the show. There are lots of very amusing toilet tales about, you know, people getting locked out and having to climb in through the toilet window and ending up in the bowl and such like, you know, all very innocent fun. And some crackers of traditional tales, which you both have shared. I've done it online. And this last year, we actually, a group of us did it down at the Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh. And we had a wonderful night, great fun. And this coming year, we will take it up to Aberdeenshire. And I'm hoping we can do a hybrid event this year so that we can have, online as well, because I missed you all when we were in Edinburgh. So.
Yeah, well, I missed the event.
Hybrid storytelling events, that's the new direction. But it's a lot to get your head around.
Yes.
Well, it is. It might all go down the plug hole, but we'll have a go at it.
Well, you do well trying to organize that, Jackie, because I really, really missed it this year. And I was like, oh, that was my, like, for the 2 years two odd years I've been a storyteller, I've been telling stories. That's been like a reference point. I think it's been either the first or one of the first storytelling events I went to, and because David sponsored it with us while we were doing the course, and so I joined it, and I was just like, this is great fun, I want to come here. And it was wonderful, really wonderful.
We managed to twin lots of toilets, so you know that's the reason. Well, no, having fun is a good enough reason in itself, but actually being able to twin toilets is just puts the icing on the cake.
Exactly.
So yes,
brilliant. It's amazing how many different ways we can apply storytelling.
Absolutely. Well. Of course, because I just think storytelling is the essence of humanity, isn't it? You know, being human means you are a storyteller. And I think that's what I love most about this art form, that everybody can do it. And, you know, so we can all take part in that gorgeous creative art form that is storytelling. And one of the best things is watching somebody who thinks they can't tell a story actually go away knowing they can. That's
well,
nice.
That's something else that we've witnessed you doing online, is bringing new storytellers, even newcomers to Scotland, to Aberdeenshire, into storytelling. So we know that you like telling Doric tales, traditional tales from the northeast of Scotland, and developing those stories, and maybe even sometimes making them up and writing them down. We know that you like telling toilet tales and welcoming people from all around the world and hosting this kind of event. What are those your favourite kinds of stories to tell, or are there some other kinds of stories you like to tell as well that we might not know about?
I do like Jack tales. The very first story I ever told was Jack and the Skinny Coo. And it remains one of my favourite stories. I read it in a book by Stanley Robertson, who was a wonderful traveller, storyteller and ballad singer. And I was very fortunate to be taken under his wing. And so in his book, Exodus to Afford, I read this tale, and I just felt a connection, because it's about a young lad growing up on a farm and a cow. And so that was me. You know, I grew up on farms around cows. I've always loved cows. You know, looking into a cow's eye is just dreamy. Anyway, this story, I told no other story for the first 6 months that I was telling stories, because I didn't have the confidence to tell any other tale. And towards the end of that 6 months, I found myself on stage with Stanley Robertson, and this is the first time I'd met him. And I suddenly realised, oh my goodness, I'm about to tell this story in front of Stanley. But fortunately, it went okay. And as I say, he graciously took me under his wing, and I heard many other jokes from Stanley. So they've always been rather special. And I think there's universal messages in the Jack stories, and there are Jack stories in lots of, you know, countries, so that, you know, there's that link. But obviously the way we tell it is the Scottish way, so.
Obviously.
And Jack stories are also popular in England. Is there a difference between Jack stories in England and Jack stories in Scotland?
Probably not really, David, but we won't admit that. I know that within the Scottish travelling tradition, they have lots and lots of Jack stories. And I'll be honest and say, I don't know if in England you have quite so many. I really don't know. But, like Silly Jack, for example, I know there's versions south of the border, and they're not that dissimilar. So, you know, yes, we'll share the Jack stories.
That's great. That's something that you have in common. So
definitely,
at least that. And Jackie, you were speaking about Jack stories, but you mentioned that there's a cow inside the story. And that you've got a special connection with cows. And I just remembered that once I was telling a story about the Headley cow, and you asked me, can I add it to my collection of cow stories? So I was wondering, what is this collection of cow stories?
Well, I really do like cows. And, you know, I am a farmer's daughter and a farmer's wife. And I just find cows very peaceful. And when I am practicing story. It is not unknown for me to go and tell the story to the cows because they are wonderful listeners. You know, they all come and they have a good look. And so, you know, I have a little bit of a joke about it, but I do like cows. And so I like to find stories that feature cows. I've never actually done a whole set on just cow stories, but maybe that will come, Simona. Maybe
it
will.
Exactly. Exactly. You never know what might come.
Absolutely.
So, Jackie, we talked about your favorite kinds of stories to tell. I think it's pretty obvious that it's Scottish stories, stories from your area, or cow stories. Is that correct?
Yeah, I absolutely. But, you know, I try to tell stories. Like, if you're in schools, then sometimes they have themes that they want you to cover. So, you know, I do tell other stories as well. But I guess if I was just pleasing myself, you have nailed it, Simona.
Great. And so you mentioned schools. Is that something that you do often? Like, you told us that you now go to schools and tell stories in Doric. So what is part of your job as a storyteller? What do you do? Do you go to schools, events, festivals?
I do quite a bit of schools work, and it is Doric based. So I would say, since COVID, most of my school's work has been Doric related. So that's great. And that's going in specifically to classes that are either studying the language or maybe preparing to study the language. And so I would tell some stories to the classes. I've been working closely with one particular school that's beside Benahi, where Jock the Giant is, and they have taken Jock to heart. And I mean, they are creating their own stories about Jock, which is just fantastic. We're actually going to be producing a book together, written in Doric, that will become one of the books that we publish. So that's really exciting. That's sort of storytelling plus. And next week I'm in another school and I will be telling local stories in Doric for them as well. So, yeah, but I do tell other places. I really love outdoors, actually. And I've done a few outdoor projects, again, rooted in the landscape, sort of linking to the local tales. I mentioned Durris earlier, and the community forest people commissioned myself and another storyteller to work with the school to create a story trail through the woods. And we got them to look at local stories and traditional stories, and they created some of their own, just looking at maps. And using the features in the maps, the landscape, you know, like up here, Shia is linked to the fairies. The Shi are the fairy folk. So there was a Sheikh Burn. So they wrote stories about the fairies that lived the burn, the little stream. I really love doing those kind of projects, community based projects that are often in the landscape. Yeah,
it's fascinating to ponder whether these stories, you know, how the stories that have been passed down to us, how they originated. You know, we know that they were passed on by word of mouth, and then carrying on that tradition with school kids and doing projects like this, where they themselves story the local landscape. They bring it to life through stories, which are probably stories that they'll remember, particularly if they stay in the area, or even if they just leave but come back and visit and pass on to their own kids. So it's kind of really curious to think how the stories that are created in this, in our modern context, might become somehow the passed on traditional stories of the future. I mean, how's that going to work?
I don't know. I mean, I have to say, I am not a deep thinker when it comes to these things. I just, how I tend to just think story, however it is created or manifested or passed on, has got to be good, because I just think stories are inertly good. I suppose, right, I'll explain. Like, I have created a story about the day the devil met Jock the Giant. And that comes out of the wee tales that I told you earlier about the devil burying his wife, and him and Jock the Giant liking throwing stones, and the devil was standing on a hill called the Hill of Three Stones. So I created that story, but I like to think that it's got a truth in that it's rooted in the landscape and in snippets of local lore. And since we've lost those original stories, creating these ones that feel like they could be traditional, I feel is passing on the tradition. Now, I know some people won't like that. Some people want to be purist. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not a purist. Although there are some tales that I wouldn't touch, because I respect the fact that they need to be done in a particular way, and I'm not that kind of storyteller.
Okay, that's fascinating. Yeah. And there's something very special, there's something very magical, isn't there, about storytelling in the landscape, because however much we prepare, the weather, you know, it might be a sudden shower in the middle of the story, or a particular bird might land just in front of the kids, or another creature might appear. So there's this wonderful serendipity, and that can become part of the moment, that spontaneity. Is that something that you notice as well?
Absolutely, David. Yeah. Telling on Ben Ahi one time, and it was in the middle of the day, and this owl hooted at the absolute perfect point, you know, and it's like you couldn't quite believe your ears. I love that. And even things that are distractions, like the little puddock, the frog that suddenly hopped across, and nobody was listening to the story anymore, but who cares, because there was a puddock hopping across. You know, so and sometimes you can weave these things in, and it just enhances the moment. There is something, but I think just being out in nature has an effect on people. It's different. It's a different atmosphere for telling stories outside than inside.
Yeah, somehow that tree that's in the story, when you bring it into the story, everybody, the tree seems to vibrate and shine brighter, because we're all paying close attention to the story. Yeah. And now that tree is part of it. There's something incredible about story in nature, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, there has to be a magic if you're sitting in Sanford Bay telling the story of the mermaid that sat on the rock at Sanford Bay. I mean, it's just, you can imagine it. And you can see.
You've referred to so many stories. I want to hear them all.
Yeah.
Simona, is it time for Jackie to tell a story?
Absolutely. Jackie, do you have a story? Please don't tell us you didn't bring a story.
Well, yeah. Well, as usual, I'm very greedy. Which story to tell? Because I can't remember which ones I've told you before, Simona.
Oh, I'll listen to anything from you.
Anything. So. Okay. Well, do you know, right, we just mentioned Sanford Bay. I think I will go for that one. And I want to tell you where I came across this story. And I don't know if you've heard of the Kist of Riches, or Tober and Dochis. My Gaelic's not very good, but it's something like Tober and Dochis. Kist of Riches. It's an online resource of recordings from School of Scottish Studies, I think the BBC, and there's somewhere else as well, but these are collections of stories and songs that have been recorded in the past, well, way back to the 50s and before. So it's a wonderful resource. And there's a little tale by Mrs. K. Jemison. It was recorded in 1953, and Mrs. K. Jemison lived in Burnhaven near Peterhead in the northeast of Scotland. And she told this tale, and she said, "It's a true story told about my great-great-grandfather." And the story is called Fitty's Portion. Now, Fitty was the by name, the nickname of her grandfather, because he was a fisherman, or her great-great-grandfather. He was a fisherman, and all the fishing communities, well, there's quite a lot of people who are called Jemison or Smith or whatever. You know, there's not many surnames, so they need by names to identify who they're talking about. So I'm going to tell this story in Doric, because you've convinced me that you're interested in Doric. So I'm going for it. Okay. So this is Fitty's Portion. Fitty was walking across the beach. Ah, he was probably thinking about Fitty was going to hay for his supper, or maybe imagining Fitty's daughters might dee when they grew up. He was daydreaming, really. For nightings, he heard as queer soon. And he thought to himself, he thought, "Is that the scurries up in the cliffs?" Nah, it wasn't the seagulls. "Och, maybe it's some queer beast oot in the water," he thought. But he looked oot at the North Sea and couldn't see a thing. "Ach, it'll be some bairns guddling about in the water, doon in the rock pools," he thought. And he carried on towards his fishing boat. Syne audience, he heard this almighty skreek, a skirl the likes of, oh mighty, some bairn, he thought, must have fallen and hurt himself. So he could run in towards the soon, recht towards the rock pools, for he thought some bairns had hurt themselves. But when he got there, he secht near Teeny's breath awa, mighty, for there, sitting on a muckle steen, was a mermaid. Fitty's heart was beating fast, his throat was dry, and the hairs in the back of his head turned up, for he'd been told about mermaids. His feather had warned him, and his grandfather had warned them, "Dinna hae onything to dee with the merfolk, for they're dangerous." So Fitty was about to turn and ging awa, but he looked at the one mermaid. Oh, and she was greeting sair. The tears were rolling down her cheeks. And he thought, she doesn't look coarse, she doesn't look dangerous. And he couldn't stop himself. He shouted out, "Fit ails you, quine? Fit's wrong? Can I help?" Well, if a fisherman had gotten a flag when he seen a mermaid, mair so the mermaid when she seen a fisherman, for she had heard stories about what they could do to merfolk. They would catch you in muckle nets and drag you onto the shore and pitch you in tunks and never let you back into the water. The mermaid was just awa to loup into the sea and swim awa, but she looked at Fitty, and he didn't look coarse. He didn't look dangerous. He looked kind. And she couldn't stop herself. She blurted out, "I've tint my comb. My comb is lost and my hair's in enough a mess. I'm in a really bad hair day. And there's a ball a night at Cayley doon an eath of water. And I went to gang because my favourite merman is going to be here. But I can't go looking like this. Oh, my hair, what a sauce it is." Well, the fisherman kent foo important it was for a quine that her hair should be bonny. So he offered to look for a comb. And he haked up and doon a sand, up and doon he went, looking for thon comb. But he couldn't find it. But he did, Finn, a fish bean. And the bone looked a bitty like a comb. So he picked it up and he teen it o'er to the mermaid. Oh, she says, oh, thank you, Offa. Oh, it's magic. Foo on earth am I ever going to thank you? And she started combing her hair. I can, she says, I'll grant you a wish, for I hae the poor. Well, Fitty started to shock his head. He hadna deen it for ony benefit to himsel. He only wanted to help the lass. But Finny seen foo doon in the moosha looked foo upset that he would reject her offer. He says, arecht, arecht. And he had a think to himsel. And he thought, well, I dinna went to her muckle siller. For too much money never did onybody ony guid. But I never went to be a thoot. So he speared a mermaid if he could hae just eneugh to see him a' his days, so his family would never wint. And the mermaid said, nay, bother of a', I'll grant that wish to yoursel and to your bairns and to your bairns' bairns. And say, Mrs. Jameson said, it was a case richt up to her day. The folk o' Barnhaven spoke aboot Fitty's portion, the benefit that the fisherman got for helping the mermaid.
I think I've said this to you before, Jackie, that story is so incredibly similar to a story that comes from the very, very other end of this very long island that we live on. Because in the south of Cornwall, the same story is almost the same, the story of the fisherman and the mermaid.
Yeah.
So it's extraordinary how stories are, have these similarities across, well, not just across one land, but across the world. Fascinating.
It is lovely, isn't it? And again, it's not, you know, story unites humanity in that, you know, we have the same themes, we have the same wants, we have the same needs, and I do love that. And actually, I can't remember if I've told you this before, but that story we told at the Scottish Storytelling Festival, and I told it in Doric. A lovely young storyteller for the Northeast told it in English. My friend Khalud, who is Syrian, told it in Arabic, and we had somebody tell it in BSL as well. And it was the same story. It wasn't translations, it was our own versions, and it was absolutely magical. And we had a film of the story as well, and we had a filmmaker who'd come and done some filming. So I think it's that universality of stories that are told in different versions all over the place, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Jackie, I really enjoyed that story. And I don't think I've ever heard you tell that story, but I've got a little book of Scottish stories. Uh-huh. And I don't know, maybe there's something similar in it, because I remember something about a mermaid and a comb. So I'll check it out and I'll let you know.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. Well, there are a few mermaid stories on the Kist of Riches, and we don't have time for me to tell you them all, but there's one I love, which I'll just give you the outline of. Stanley Robertson is actually telling it. And it's set, I can't remember, it's a bit, maybe even up in Orkney, can't remember where it's set. But this fisherman hears a mermaid singing when he's out fishing one time, and he instantly falls in love with her. So he decides he has to find her, and he gives up fishing and spends days and weeks and months searching. And he finally discovers where she is. And she's in an underground cavern, with a whole lot of other merfolk. And so he goes down and he starts swimming towards her, and he thinks, oh, at last, I'm going to meet her face to face. And he gets right up close. And just at the point when she spots him, he realizes that that beautiful golden hair was actually seaweed, and that pearly white teeth were actually sharks, and that lovely shiny skin was all scaly and fish-like. And he thinks, maybe I don't love her anymore. And he turns and he just escapes by the skin of his teeth. It's a hilarious little story and quite different in mood from, yeah. So it's one of my favourites.
Yeah. Well, you must come back to the podcast and tell that story, Jackie, because now I want to hear it. And I think also, like, people who listen to the podcast will want to hear that story as well. So you must tell it.
Well, I it doesn't take much to convince me to tell a tale, Simona.
Great.
I just want to sum up something, and that is, I've not only been learning about storytelling from Jackie during this interview, I've also been learning a little bit of Doric. And I just want to say the three B's that I learned in context. Okay, Jackie, you deserve to be Big Z'd because you are a remarkable storyteller, bringing your culture and your enthusiasm, your joy of storytelling to all those Berns where you live in the northeast of Scotland, where you bide.
Yay!
So great for work, wonderful, and respect to you for the wonderful storytelling and joy you bring to your region, but now via the internet to all of us around the world.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, David and Simona. Do you know, it's always a joy to spend time in both your company, and you guys are doing a great job spreading the joy of storytelling with this podcast and with everything else you do. And David, I would not really expect any less from you than to be able to pick up another language just like that. But I'm awfully impressed with your use of the Doric. Weel dean loon.
Well done.
Oh, well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much, Jackie, for being with us. And thank you, David, for joining me and bringing so much to this interview with Jackie. And for those listening, we'll be back soon with another episode. And just goodbye.
Cheerio.